Welcome to the Grin Gets Real podcast, the show for people who want to maximize their marketing potential. My name is Katya, and I'm your host on this exciting journey as we talk to our experts who join us. From influencer marketing to e-commerce strategy and everything in between, each episode will feature industry experts that share their insights and provide actionable tips to help you achieve your marketing goals. So put your AirPods in, turn up that volume, and get ready for our resident expert on influencer marketing guest, Allison Brown. Allison, thank you so much for coming on to the Grin Gets Real podcast. I'm super excited to just kind of dig in and talk about just how someone can scale their influencer marketing program. But before we do get started, I'd love for you to share a little bit about yourself and your expertise.
I'm so happy to be here. So thanks for having me. A little bit about my background. I'm originally from Ohio and went to Ohio State for marketing. So I have a marketing background and then moved out to Utah for a health foods company called Kodiak Cakes back in 2016. And almost immediately with them is where I started in my influencer marketing experience. So I started their program from the ground up and really built their program based on an experiential marketing event experience that then translated into campaigns with influencers. So that's where I kind of began all of my influencer experience and then moved on to Factor, which was another health foods company, and built their influencer program from the ground up. So I have a lot of experience with building programs, especially with startups.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so excited to be talking to you about this, because I do think that a lot of times people think that influencer marketing is relatively new. It's been around for a while, just name something different. And I don't think that it hasn't been until lately, right, the last few years, where it's really developed into a marketing strategy for everybody. There are a lot of people who start their program, but really the scaling part of it is where I'm incredibly interested to get your take on it. Now, before we really dive into just kind of some tips and strategies for that, I'd love to provide some context of what we're talking about when it comes to scaling. I think automatically if you think of, okay, that means going from 0 to 100 or 50 to 1,000, is it a quantity number or is it a quality number, or is it something a little bit more in depth?
I think it all depends on your campaign goals and your program goals overall. I think if you're going to be creating a program for brand awareness and content creation, working with hundreds, if not thousands of influencers in one-off scenarios is where you want to be, because you're going to be getting a lot of eyeballs on your products. And not only that, but you're getting a lot of content in return. So if that's your goal, that's great. But then I think it comes down to looking at whether you're looking at conversions and ROI. And if that's the goal of your influencer marketing program, you really should build a program more in depth with deeper relationships, more long-term relationships, because conversion isn't necessarily happening with those one-off relationships like they used to.
Now, I always think that regardless of your objective, you're always going to get brand awareness, content, and a return on investment as far as like revenue when it comes to influencer marketing. Would you agree with that? Or do you think that you get other benefits from engaging with influencers?
I think you can get those things, but at different levels of greatness and different levels of being on brand. I think it's really easy to go out and collaborate with a ton of influencers that drive incredibly high conversions, but they're not necessarily on brand and they might not even be creating content you want to reuse. Yeah. So I do think that there's a sweet spot when you can find people that really align with your brand and are creating content that you could reuse and driving conversions because all of those things are aligned. So there is a sweet spot. And I think anyone can go out and pay a bunch of people to post about their product and they're going to get brand awareness.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's definitely much more of a transaction. Mm-hmm. But you go into it knowing that it is much more of a transaction relationship because you have also been a part of, you know, kind of developing programs from the ground up with startups. What do you think people kind of have to have in place before even getting started with an influencer marketing program?
I think having a clear goal is huge. Making sure everyone on the marketing team, especially the higher ups, are aligned with what the goal for the program is. I think it's a huge red flag when you go start influencer marketing and they want it all. They want high conversions. They want the biggest numbers of brand awareness, and they want a ton of content creation that they can reuse. I think when you try and go into influencer marketing and have all of those things as your goals, you're probably not going to do any of those things well. So if you can really narrow it down to just one thing to focus on, you can do that one thing very well and really succeed. But if you're constantly trying to figure out a sweet spot for all three or more of those goals, it's just not going to work. And then beyond that, I think you need a good people infrastructure to run the influencer marketing program and the technology to run it. I think gone are the ways of using Excel spreadsheets to manage this kind of thing.
You don't like all the formulas and trying to remember which cell you updated last time. I always feel like that's been my struggle always with spreadsheets and even in running influencer programs, just kind of in the past. So that's kind of your advice for getting started. Let's say I'm already started and now I'm like, I want to scale. And scale for me means I'd like to double whatever the amount of influencers I have. I personally think it's unrealistic to say, all right, I want 50 to 1,000. Like, I feel like you got to crawl before you walk and walk before you run, right? But what kind of things do you think a program kind of has to have in place before you can really tackle that scaling? If I'm working from a spreadsheet because I can manage 25 influencers on a spreadsheet, but I do see like doubling, tripling in the future. What kind of things do I need to have in place in order to make that happen?
You absolutely need a platform. I like, cannot stress that enough. And, you know, Grin is obviously my platform of choice after doing so many demos with different platforms and even working with so many different options. Grin, you know, has it all in terms of if you're just looking to generate content and kind of categorize it and look through the content that people are creating, or if you really want to measure click-through rates and ROI and conversions, Grin can do all of those things. And I think deciding that you're going to scale is step one. Step two is immediately go purchase a platform.
Yeah.
It's usually a pretty big investment, especially for small companies, but I think that that's the biggest piece of advice I can give is just know that you're reinvesting in yourself when you sign up for a platform to actually track everything on, because at that point, you're not spending so many man hours doing something that a program can do for you. You don't have to manually go in and look at stories and, you know, look at how many likes and comments a post got. It's so unnecessary and it's such a waste of time. You know, when you have one person running an entire program, you can't expect them to do that.
Well, that was going to be the next question that I was going to ask you. Let's say, okay, I've got the right platform in place, right? Hopefully Grin, side note, definitely not a promotional bit, but let's say you decide, okay, I'm investing in the right platform. Now what? Like, I strongly believe that you should probably have some other things kind of in place, like an ideal workflow, a way to audit influencers, a way to just kind of evaluate the next steps on like, all right, once I see success in my original objective, how can I expand from there and truly scale a program?
I think all of those things that you listed are necessary.
Yeah.
Running a program. Again, just looking back at your goals and if you're following a campaign calendar and looking at the different ways that you can create a program, I think that's kind of like the next step. Like, oh, cool, I have a platform. Now what? It's more, what is this program going to look like? And if you've talked to other people in the industry, I think that's a huge plus, but programs can be run any which way and be successful. I've seen a lot of companies run what I call evergreen campaigns, where they're consistently working with influencers. They're constantly putting them into the same campaign and workflow, and they just keep going around and around. Personally, I do a lot more campaign that are like marketing specific in terms of a product release or like a time of the year that we're running a certain campaign, and those last a month to 2 months, and measuring the success on those specific niche campaigns. So I think going into it, you need to decide what kind of program are you going to run? And you can test both of them. I think that that's totally fine when you first sign up with a platform. Test what's going to work for you and your company and your goals. But know that you have to outline that. That you can't just kind of go in and say, okay, we're just going to start working with influencers. Let's go and throw some money at things and see what sticks. It's much more strategic than that.
And I love the way that you said testing, because I think the testing is definitely the key. And for me, would be my advice for really anybody who wants to scale their program. You do have to figure out what's right for you. I think that, to your point, there is really no secret sauce to it. It's whatever it is that you're going to make, and then make it happen. I'm really interested in hearing about how you structure those kind of short-term campaigns. Do you structure those campaigns looking for specific people, or do you involve the influencers that you've already been working with within like a shorter term, like a product launch campaign?
I think it's a little bit of both. In my experience, mm-hmm. I like using people I've already worked with and I know what to expect from them. But those shorter campaigns are also a great opportunity to pull in new people that I'm a little mm-hmm. unsure about and see how they would handle marketing a new product launch or a service, that sort of thing, and see how they deliver and how it is to interact with them even. Because, you know, going back and forth via email with an influencer is different than actually signing contracts and then actually working with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's almost like learning someone's true colors.
Yeah.
You kind of get to know people better throughout that relationship and can kind of decide from there. Do I want to work with this person again in an evergreen capacity? Are they going to be invited to a future campaign? Maybe, maybe not.
Well, I also really like that you said that as well, too. I think that when you're evaluating if an influencer is going to work for your program, it goes beyond the metrics as well, too. The metric that we oftentimes as marketers lose sight of is the time investment with someone. So mm-hmm. if an influencer is easy to work with, it saves you time. It saves you money mm-hmm. because that's man hours behind it. What are your thoughts behind that?
I think relationships are key. I think yeah. that influencers, I've seen more and more over the years, influencers lose sight that they're working with a brand, but they're also working with a person behind that brand. And yeah. in some cases, that was me, obviously. I was that person behind the brand that they were interacting with. And just being a kind, good person goes a long way. They yeah. seem to have not realized that if they make me unhappy, if they rub me the wrong way, if they're rude, they're losing out on the opportunity to work with the brand, because I personally don't want to work with that person or deal with them anymore. So I think there's a lot to be said about being a good person, being easy to work with, being uh-huh. kind, because I hate to say it like this, but for that person, there's probably at least 1,000 more that are just like them on the internet. And I can work with any of those other people instead of them if I've had a bad experience with them. And I will. And I think it just goes to show that you just have to be nice.
We're all people, which actually kind of yes. brings me to the word influencer. I think that it's started to get just kind of a negative connotation. And I'm always hearing ambassador, creator, influencer. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, the names vary. I mean, what are your thoughts on like what you call them? Should it be kind of specific to kind of your brand so that you're building a community and it's less of this kind of negative connotation when you hear the word influencer? Or is that overthinking it? I'm a classic overthinker, so it could be that.
I don't think you're overthinking it. I think it definitely, the word influencer, it has a negative connotation. It just yeah. does these days. And I think internally, it's okay to call things one way. And I think I've seen this a lot where internally in the company, I'm like, we're calling them influencers, we're calling them affiliates, we're calling them whatever. Yeah. And then in communication with them, just calling them more like brand ambassador, you're yeah. a content creator. And I've had conversations with influencers about it, saying, what do you prefer to be called? Is calling you an influencer somehow derogatory? Because it has such a bad connotation. And most of them don't care. But I will say there is a more positive perception with calling them a content creator. And I think because the words are so interchangeable, when you do have an internal program that you're creating, you have to really clearly lay out what means what. Like I've seen, even within the companies I've worked for, there's the micro influencer program, there's the yeah. ambassador program, there's the brand ambassador. There's so many different words that we're using and throwing around to call these different types of people that as long as internally you know what means what, then
yeah. Yeah, I also think it's really key to just kind of building that community, self-identifying them internally, like you said, so that everybody just knows what you're talking about. And then, you know, they do feel like they are part of the team. I think that that's really the huge part from like the relationship building part, but it also is very time consuming. Like we're people, it takes time to just kind of foster those relationships. What kind of advice would you give to someone that is trying to scale their program and they're like, that's just too time consuming, Allison. I can't like have that kind of back and forth. I have to meet this number. I have to get X amount of influencers. I'm reporting this to my boss. Like it's kind of much more of like this churn to get that metric. What are your thoughts behind that?
I think if you're chasing metrics, you can guarantee that the quality of the content that you're getting is probably not going to be as high as you would potentially expect or like. I think that it's very important that as you build relationships, that helps foster a relationship for them with the brand in a way that they can then speak to the brand and also create content for the brand that's more authentic. It's just a quantity over quality situation. If you're just going to keep chasing after metrics, you're just going to keep getting quantity, which is fine depending on what your goals are for the program. I have no problem with it, but just know that the quality isn't going to be there. So then if you're turning in these metrics and you're hitting your goals and your boss is like, well, you know, we have all these posts, but they're not what I expected. They're not up to our quality standards. We can't reuse them. Well, then change the metrics.
I like that. Turn it upside down. Okay. So I'm scaling my program. I've got different objectives. I have now the right tool. What's the right team look like in play? I know that you've been part of a team of one where you're running a program, but at what point do we scale it up and like grow out our team?
Yes. I've been in both situations where I was a team of one and stayed that team of one the entire time, which was fine, I think, because I had already had experience in building influencer marketing programs. So I knew a lot of what I was doing, but then also grew my own team. And I think as soon as influencer marketing starts to take off and the metrics start to become bigger than what you know that you can personally accomplish, it's time to build out the team. And I think teams can be built out a couple different ways, and I think either or way can really be successful. In my experience, we built it out by type of influencer. So, for example, having a micro influencer manager, you know, smaller accounts, because there's a lot more back and forth, there's a lot more outreach, there's a ton more people you're working with. But then also having the macro celebrity influencer person, where they were probably going to go back and forth a lot more with agents. It's a lot more scouting and researching before actually reaching out at that point. Kind of like, how can we break up our influencers by type and then have a person assigned to that very specific niche? And then also how a social media team would be built out and potentially having social media managers for specific platforms where they're the expert in that platform. You can do that with an influencer marketing program. And I've seen that really successful where you have a person who is a TikTok influencer expert and they know everything about that platform and they know who to work with and how to work with them and what the expectations are in terms of deliverables and pay and that sort of thing. And then you might have somebody else who's strictly on Instagram or strictly on Pinterest or YouTube. Breaking it up by platform is also another good way to look at it.
I like the thought of what you're describing is also the way I would break up different campaigns. You can kind of slice and dice them in whatever way makes sense for you as well. Before you even get to that, though, you have to have like this ideal workflow already set up. You know, I've talked to some brands who are like, hey, I need to get my ducks in a row so that we can figure out how we are going to move our community of ambassadors through our program, like what our program looks like, versus just getting someone signed up. They start either an evergreen or a short-term campaign, and then we're done with them. I would imagine that there is a bit more of a kind of rinse and repeat. I know that for us, the Grinway or the ideal Grin way is like invite people to your brand, introduce them to who you are. That's how you're going to get more of like that authentic content, and then test them out. See what happens. What do they bring you back? And then rinse and repeat with the people who are successful with your brand and really develop those relationships. But what do you think your ideal campaign workflow looks like?
I think I'm totally aligned with the Grin way of doing it. I think it's really important to test people and test relationships and give them that initial introduction to the brand. Mm-hmm. So in my ideal scenario, I would reach out and have them apply to work with us so I can get some more information about them. Mm-hmm. In my mind, if they aren't willing to fill out, you know, a 3-questionnaire application, then I doubt they're really going to be willing to put in the work to work with us.
I like
for
that.
Me, it's almost like a test.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people like, oh, well, I don't fill out applications to work with brands. And I'm like, wow, cool. We don't have to work with you. And so I think that that's almost like a test to see like how interested are they to work?
Yeah.
With you? Are they willing to put in any sort of work and effort from their end before we start vetting and start this relationship? So that's like a very first touch point. And then in terms of like an ideal workflow, we would have already set up a campaign, whether it's evergreen or something that's more product launch focused for a one-off, one or two month campaign. And from that point, you know, we've determined a goal, we've set the budget, we have the campaign brief, everything is set up and ready to welcome that prospect into the campaign. And typically, we're running those campaigns so quickly that I would say, I have my entire year built out. I know every single campaign for every single month or two. And then as soon as somebody is finished with one, if I like them, they're getting invited to the next one and they know it. And if they haven't, I mean, people that have worked with us consistently, certain brands that I was with, if they hadn't heard from me for a few weeks, they were concerned. They're like, am I not invited back? And I'm like, oh no. I'm just behind. I haven't created the campaign brief.
It's coming. I was going to say, it's coming your way.
Yes.
It's what happens if you're a one-woman show, right?
It's a lot.
It is a lot. Now, this next question has to do with the influencers that are not the right fit. I think a common question that I come across is, how do I break up with an influencer? And by that, it can mean various things. It can be an influencer who's already in your system that you're like, okay, we've kind of exhausted everything, versus someone who's come in and shown interest, but maybe it's just not the right fit. What kind of tips, tricks can you give to someone who is like, ooh, I do not like conflict and I want to let them down easy?
It's so hard. I feel like it's the best way. I always think of breaking up with an influencer as you go on a first date with somebody and they had a really good time, but you didn't. Now what?
Exactly.
So I think that just like on a first date situation like that, there are a couple ways you can approach it with influencers. And I like to think of it, you can be direct depending on the influencer and how well you know them or their personality, especially. You can be direct and say, your engagement rate just isn't what it needs to be. Your followers, your content isn't quite what we're looking for. You can be absolutely super direct with that person. I have seen a lot of people take that the wrong way, though, from my experience.
Yes.
So a lot of people get very touchy and very sensitive. So another way that I kind of handle this is almost like the ghosting method without actually like completely ghosting and ignoring them is to say that, you know, we just don't have a campaign open right now that we're inviting new people to, but you will keep your information on hand and we'll reach out when one becomes available. And that kind of just puts them off. And sometimes they'll reach out again in a month or two and just, you know, pop up and say, hey, do you have a campaign available? And I'll look and kind of see if any of their content has changed or their metrics have changed in a way that I think I could even work with them. And if it's not, then I just kind of still say, no, you know, we're still just not accepting new influencers right now. Can kind of put them off again for a few months. And sometimes that's just the best way to handle certain people. And I hate to say it. And I'm sure if I work with influencers in the future and say this to them, then they'll know my secret.
Well, I'm sure that they've heard it before as well, too. Have you ever had an influencer come back and maybe ask you how they can improve for the future to stay on with your program?
And they sometimes will ask about specific metrics we're looking for or be frustrated by them. I think as soon as you start throwing out, well, your engagement rate isn't high enough, they'll be upset and kind of argue that, you know, Instagram as a whole, you know, the engagement rate isn't what it used to be or something like that. And so I think that that can be a little tricky and difficult to navigate. But if you're being honest with them and they're being honest with you and just curious, I think it's fine to say that and just being completely honest. Or, I mean, if their engagement rate isn't what you want it to be and they still really want to work with you and you've told them that, then it's almost a negotiation maneuver where you can say, well, your engagement rate's here. It needs to be here. So you need to lower your pricing to this amount in order for this to work for us, because we're not getting exactly what we want out of this relationship. So we don't think you should be charging us your full price.
That's a really great tactic as well, too. I've never thought it from a negotiation standpoint, but how great would it be if someone's so interested in continuing with, you know, your brand? They definitely have a brand affinity. I always think that every touch point with your brand is an opportunity to gain a customer, even if it's an influencer. I don't know if you've ever run into that situation where part of the rejection is still giving them just kind of a discount, like, hey, maybe it's not right for you right now, or we don't have an open campaign, but here's like 10% off just in case, you know, you do want to purchase something today as well. And then you can share maybe the percentage off with a friend. I'm not sure.
That's definitely, it kind of eases the sting, I think, of telling them that they can't work with us right now by giving them some sort of discount code. We also have done something where the affiliate program, where you're getting a kickback and commission, is separate from the influencer program. So if they aren't a fit for the influencer program and getting paid to post, then I'll say, well, we don't have a campaign available right now, but here's a link to our affiliate program. You can join that in the meantime. So if they did just want to order product and post because they are such a huge fan of the brand, then at least they're getting commission that way, even if we're not paying them to post necessarily, getting their content.
Do you think that there's something that you can do to minimize the amount of influencers that maybe aren't going to be the right fit? Like, can you be proactive, kind of solve something upstream before it becomes a problem downstream?
The best thing to do is being super clear about your goals and what you're tracking to. So if your goal is to get brand awareness and you start getting all these micro influencers in the door, and that's what your roster looks like, where they only have, you know, 1,000 to 5,000 followers, that's not going to work and it's not going to help you hit your metrics that you're trying to achieve. So I think as long as you're super clear from the get-go of like what impression numbers you want to hit, what conversion numbers you want to hit, and making sure that every single person that you work with has the potential to hit those numbers, that's a great place to begin. And then if they have the potential and they just don't do it or don't perform the way you expect, that you're rude to work with, any number of reasons that it just doesn't work out, there's so many, then just knowing that you have to be the bad guy and you have to stop working with them. I think it's almost having people who are in influencer marketing that can be direct and have those tough conversations is so important, because if you have somebody running your influencer marketing team that avoids conflict, you're going to have a roster of a ton of influencers that you're working with that are not delivering because they just didn't know how to get rid of them.
Yeah. And you definitely don't want that. And I think the interpretation of conflict can be that, talk about having a negative connotation, right? Conflict doesn't mean that you're going to be so aggressive, but it does mean that you're going to be an advocate for your brand. And I think that when you tee it up in that way, it's probably easier for the person to digest. But I also think that there's probably just people that avoid conflict all the way around. So maybe not the right fit to be able to add it to your team. And another follow-up question in regards to time and just kind of scaling your program. Like I had previously said, I think that a lot of times we miss out on calculating the time that you spend to manage a particular program. Have you ever had to, and even if you haven't, do you have advice for being able to kind of tee it up to the boss? For example, the amount of time that you're spending versus like either bringing on a team member or getting a particular software is worth the investment because you are losing, you know, X amount of hours. just in recruitment or in communication?
I think people in the marketing team who aren't dealing with this day in and day out, they have no idea. And I've seen this a lot with my bosses. They just don't understand what the day-to-day looks like. And they aren't in the program, so they don't understand, which is fine. They don't have to understand the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
But when you're trying to pitch something like that, it's extremely important for them to understand. So from my perspective, what I have done in the past is take a detailed look at what my schedule is like for an entire week and write down exactly where my time is being spent. You know, from 9 to 10 a.m., I was prospecting. From 10 to 11, I was creating a campaign brief. Like, really get down to the nitty gritty and write down exactly where your time is being spent, and then be able to pitch it in a way that, okay, if I could get these 5 things off my plate each week, I would give myself this many hours back and can achieve these numbers. Especially when you're not hitting the metrics that your boss puts in front of you, this is a good way to argue for a bigger team or a better platform, because they don't understand why you're not hitting your metrics.
Yeah.
And you might just assume you're not wisely spending your 40 hours a week. And if you take a look at it and say, no, I've really been working so hard all week, and it's just not possible to achieve this without some sort of help, whether it be from better technology or adding people on, then that's a really good way for them to look at it and hopefully give them some better insight and realize, oh, that's what's happening. Okay, like, let's look into our options and see how we can help you use your time better and get some things off your plate.
I like the way that you teed that up as like, this is just kind of the challenge that I'm having right now. I'm trying to get there, but I've got, I'm also, you know, it's like climbing Mount Everest and holding everybody's backpack, right? To get to the top. The air is dwindling with every step I climb. So I like that articulation. So now it's prediction time. What do you see happening in the world of kind of influencer marketing over the next 1 to 2 years?
There's so much potential for influencer marketing. And, you know, since I started in this, the predictions have always gone, it's going to continue growing. It's going to continue growing. So I don't think that that's going to change. It's going to continue to grow. And people are going to put more and more budget behind their influencer programs or begin to have influencer programs for the first time. So I think that is a prediction that's going to stay true moving forward. Some other things I think we're going to see is video content is going to become king. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it with Reels on Instagram. TikTok isn't going anywhere. And YouTube is still growing exponentially, despite having been around for so long. So I think we're going to start seeing a bit of a move more towards video content. And then I also see influencer space becoming more of, I think it's been more brand awareness and branding, but I think it's becoming more growth and acquisition. So we're going to see influencer posts and content have companies ad dollars behind them and white labeled and whitelisted. So I think it's going to become a huge avenue for what we're seeing with paid advertising as well. So I think that that's going to continue to grow from what we've started to just barely see it as, and, you know, conversions and creating sales from influencer marketing is about to be key. It's no longer, you know, where it was in public relations and communications and brand awareness. It's now moving to the growth team, and it's just going to continue to scale from there.
Yeah, I love that prediction. Moving it to revenue generating and sitting with the growth team is definitely going to shake things up, I think, within like an internal marketing org structure. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you just kind of dropping the knowledge on how to scale a program, things that you need in place in order to really run an effective program as well, too. I think that you've left our listeners with some actionable insights, so I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's been great.
In this episode, Allison breaks down what needs to be in place to scale your program. But even before then, we chatted about what scaling your program means. For some people, it's increasing your influencer roster. For others, it's creating a multifaceted campaign structure. Either way you slice it, having a framework that identifies objectives, goals, and KPIs will help you achieve scaling your program. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. Give us some stars. I wouldn't mind 5 of them, and leave us a review. If you're interested in learning more about GRIN, visit our website at grin.co. That's GRIN.co. Until next time, keep grinning.